At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Mid Musings podcast, the podcast where we raise awareness about mental health and disabilities and different ways that it affects people and how different people deal with different issues. So I have with me today Lisa Sugarman. She's based in Boston and she is a grief, loss and mental health counselor, and also she works with the Trevor Project. So basically, without much ado, I'm gonna ask Lisa to tell us more about what she does with the Trevor Project and how she got involved with that.
Thank you so much for having me. First of all, I'm just so grateful that it worked out that we could have this conversation. So as far as why I do what I do, made a pretty large shift in my career in the past several years. I had been a parenting author for many, many years, had written several parenting books and was very much in that space for a very long time. I learned very much by accident that my father, who passed away when I was 10 years old, had actually died by suicide. And I didn't find that out until I was 45 years old. So there was a 35-year period where I believed my father had died of a heart attack. And that was probably the biggest catalyst for shifting me out of the space that I was in and into the mental health space, which is where I am now. And my father's suicide was not the only suicide. So I'm a three-time survivor, unfortunately. I lost a cousin of mine a year before my father passed away. And then more recently, a few years ago, my husband and I lost one of our closest childhood friends. So I really just had a complete, I guess, breakdown of my history and the way that I understood my history to be and the narrative of my life. It all just kind of blew up in my face at that point when I found out about 10 years ago. And in rebuilding kind of this new narrative of what had happened to my father, it just really put me in a place of wanting to understand what someone's state of mind is when they're feeling that distressed, how to help someone, what resources they might need. All of those issues and questions were kind of firing for me. And I just took it as a sign that I needed to make a shift in the work that I was doing and the content that I was creating. So I ended up starting very slowly, only a few years ago, speaking about my father's suicide. And the more I did, the more people responded to it in such a positive way and in such an appreciative way that I just kept sharing. And then I began writing and then I began speaking, and one thing led to another. And that's one of the reasons why I found my way to the Trevor Project, which, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, the Trevor Project is actually the largest LGBTQ crisis and support hotline in this country for at-risk youth.
That's in the U.S.
Yeah. 13 to 24 in the U.S. And we actually also have a base in Mexico as well, but it's primarily in the United States. And so we help at-risk youth dealing with everything from suicidality or homicidality and abuse or neglect or homelessness or coming out, any kind of mental health crisis that anyone might be challenged with, we work with. So I'm a lifeline counselor with them, and I work with Samaritans here in Boston as well. I'm one of their suicide grief group facilitators. And it's really just kind of become the focus of my work. So that's kind of how I went from that point to where I am now.
Oh, brilliant. So thank you so much. I mean, you've talked about so many things about how you got involved with the Trevor Project and your dad committing suicide. You know, recently I was discussing with a friend of mine. We realized that our parents must have gone through the stage we're going through right now, mm-hmm. when we're having all sorts of issues, and those are things that are actually affecting our mental health as well. We are struggling with mental health issues, but during our parents' time, it was a taboo to talk about such things. I'm sorry that your dad, number one, he took his own life, and then you had to find out like only just 10 years ago. Yeah. So you've had to grieve him when he died initially, and now finding out that he actually took his own life. How did that impact on you, really?
I mean, I've lost my dad twice. That's the way that's what it really boils down to, is that, you know, because you go through, or at least I went through, that grieving process all over again. I mean, I found out very unexpectedly, not in a very dramatic way, but I learned that truth at a time when I certainly never expected to learn it. In that moment, it brought me right back to that period when I was 10 years old and I lost him that first time, and I'm grieving him that first time. But it's so multi-layered, because when you talk about loss in general, there are some very specific nuances associated with just losing someone that you love, right? There's the sadness and the heartbreak and the pain and the bargaining and the uncertainty. All of those things are common pieces that kind of transcend loss in general. But when you move into that place of a suicide loss, it's very, very different. It's a loss that's so unique in so many ways, because you're dealing with, in some cases, the why that you may not know, which is, that was a part of my father's story. We suspect some things. We don't know a lot of the reason why. We, you know, again, we suspect that we know what pressure he was under at that time, but we don't really know what the root cause was. You're dealing with this whole list of issues, like you're questioning, what could I have done? What should I have done? What signs did we miss? How could we have helped? And I mean, I was a 10-year-old child. Even in my mind, I can reconcile that I don't hold myself responsible as a 10-year-old child for not knowing that my father, who never looked like someone who was struggling, was in pain. We never saw anything from my father. So there was no way to really know and understand that he was struggling on that level. So it blew me apart. And it started me right back, first minute of losing him, all over again, but this time with a completely different narrative.
Yeah. No, thank you so much. I mean, that is so difficult to have to go through the grief the first time, and then having to grieve for him again the second time. It's something that I know a lot of people actually have to go through as well. So my question is, how do you recognize when people are going into that headspace, when they're feeling hopeless, when they're feeling like nothing in life is worth it anymore? How do you recognize that as a counselor?
There are lots of different signs and signals that people give off. I mean, sometimes you don't know. I mean, sometimes, quite honestly, unless someone is telling you directly, this is how I'm feeling, this is what I'm thinking, you don't know. And clearly, if someone's calling me on a lifeline, there's an issue. There's a reason that someone picks up that phone to call that number. Mm-hmm. And we find our way to usually what the cause of that issue is. But when you're talking about someone, whether it be a friend or a family member or a colleague that you work with, who you're seeing every day, you might not know. And then you might, because they might be very vocal about it. Maybe there's someone, I know a lot of people in my own life who struggle with mental illness and depression. And for instance, they'll post about being unhappy on social media, for example. Or whenever you talk to them, most of what you might hear are the things that are troubling them and upsetting them and burdening them. And so, you know, there are two very different kinds of people. There are the people who just let it all out, and then it's very easy to see, okay, well, that's what's bothering them, and let's dive into ways that we can address it. And then there are times when you can't. You have to become a good listener. You have to, I think, learn how to ask the right questions. I think in some cases, we really have to almost put more energy into navigating the friendships and relationships that seem like they're okay. those are the ones that you almost have to be more concerned about, because the likelihood is higher that you won't know when something's wrong. So we really have to just, we have to start checking in on each other in different ways.
Oh, thank you. And you've just said now that sometimes you don't know, but what if you find out that someone you love is contemplating suicide? What can you do?
The first thing that I think is the most critical thing is being, and this is what we're taught as counselors, is to address that person's suicidality directly, very, very directly. And that's a hard position to be in, both as the person who's checking in on someone and asking, and also for the person who's receiving it, because it's really hard for someone to say, I'm really not okay. I'm really thinking about harming myself, or I'm thinking about taking my life, or I don't want to live anymore, which is why it makes it so important to be super, super direct and use very intentional language with someone that you're close to, or even if it's someone you're not super close to, it's so important to say, are you thinking of killing yourself? And you say it like that, or you say, are you thinking of harming yourself? And you say it just like that. So there's no misinterpretation about what you're asking. And what I think freaks a lot of people out is the directness of a question like that. You know, the person who's asking the question, it's a hard one to ask, number one. And number two, what the hell do you do when someone says, actually, I'm not happy. I'm not okay. I don't want to live anymore. So what that's doing is, by asking someone directly, you're validating the pain that they're in and the challenges that they're facing. And you're automatically providing them a safe space to either unload what they're feeling or work through what they're feeling. That's one great benefit of being so direct like that. And also, you're now a resource for that person. You can start having those important conversations about, well, what is it that's making you feel this way? And how can we work through it? And how can we develop a safety plan? And here are some resources that you can find. And one of the best, next to asking someone directly how they're feeling, the next best thing is to offer them a resource like, in this country, in the US, we have the 988 Crisis and Suicide Hotline. And I know that around the world, there are similar numbers in probably close to 170 different countries around the world. Many of them are 988. I would say, just as a human being, we should all, regardless of where we live, we should all just invest a few minutes of our time finding out what that number is. Put it in your phone, put it on your brain, keep it handy and accessible. Even someone who's trained, we're not supposed to solve someone's problems. We're not responsible for fixing what's going on with someone. We just need to be there to hold space and help and guide them to someone who can.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much for that. That takes me to the next question, because you just said you could call the emergency number, which is available literally every country has an emergency response number. Do you dial on behalf of that person that you know who is contemplating suicide, or do you then just get that person to call? How does it work?
Well, it depends on how you're asking. It depends. Are you asking how I handle that if I'm on a crisis lifeline, or if I'm just with a friend in my personal life? And
in a personal life, I mean, because yes. And then ask someone who handles calls in the lifeline as well.
Sure. So if we're talking about someone in just your private life, someone you care about, a partner or a friend or a colleague, what you would want to do is encourage that person to call that lifeline on their own, if they're able, if they're in a headspace where they can handle making a call like that, and hopefully they will. If that person is, for whatever reason, incapable of doing that, you can absolutely do something on your own on that person's behalf. And what that's called is a third-party call. It means that you're calling, maybe you're a parent calling on behalf of your child, or maybe you're a spouse calling on behalf of your partner or a friend. So you can absolutely do that. And that's one way of handling it if that person is incapable of calling on their own behalf. And then as a lifeline counselor, what we try very hard to do is really just de-escalate someone. If we are on a call that's a high or imminent risk suicide call, which means that, for instance, someone has called us and they intend to take their life and they have a plan and a time frame and the means and it's imminent, what we would try to do is de-escalate that person. and work with them to develop a safety plan and get them to maybe call a therapist if they work with a therapist, or maybe go to a hospital if it's an urgent need to be seen by a medical professional. We would try and encourage them to do that on their own behalf. That's called that's a voluntary intervention where they're doing it on their own. An involuntary intervention, which doesn't happen quite as often, is if we as counselors have exhausted every single option for trying to help that person help themselves, we can certainly offer to make a call on their behalf, which happens sometimes, or sometimes in a really imminent situation where nothing is working, we do have to call authorities on our own and take that initiative. And we have got licensed therapists in the case of the Trevor Project, where I volunteer. If we have to get a therapist involved, that therapist will be the one to make that call and send someone to do some kind of a wellness check or to help that person. So there are lots of different outcomes, but the ideal situation is having someone be willing to help themselves.
Thank you so much. At this juncture, I'm just going to point out some lifeline numbers for anyone that is listening to this podcast, in case anyone is feeling overwhelmed and contemplating suicide for any reason. There's a National Suicide Prevention Line, and that number is 0800-273-8255. It's a 24/7 service, and you can just call and you'll be directed to somebody who can offer you help. And then you have the Samaritans. The number is 116-123. And then Campaign Against Living in Israel. That's a number for anyone who has any mental health related issues. You can just speak to someone for a confidential chat, and you can go online as well to have a chat. The number is 0800-585-858. And then we have MIND, which is also a national mental health service. Their number.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's 0300-123-3393. So that's just a few of the numbers in the United Kingdom. And I'm sure globally, if you just call your emergency number, response number, be it 911, 111, 999, whatever the number is, you will be pull through to someone who would be available to listen to you and point you in the right direction. So I just needed to give that number and that information to anyone at that point. Thank you so much. So going back to your work with the Trevor Project, how have you found it?
It's been life-changing for me, because you mentioned something earlier when we first started chatting about my father, and that, you know, my father passed away in 1978. There was a huge stigma around mental unwellness and mental illness and suicide, and people weren't openly talking about their issues. People certainly were not getting help in the way that they're getting help now, and organizations didn't exist on the level that they exist now. So I couldn't do anything at that point as a 10-year-old child to help my father. And my mother couldn't either, because my mother didn't know that my father was struggling. One of the things that, one of the biggest blessings for me about the Trevor Project is that I'm now in a position to take those calls, to help those people who are struggling and who are feeling hopeless find help and find hope. And I couldn't save my father, but I can save others. And for me, that's a gift. That's been the biggest gift, honestly, about being aligned with the Trevor Project. And some of the smaller pieces that I've taken away that are also incredibly impactful for me is that the training that I went through to become a Lifeline counselor really just completely reformed the way that I hold space for people. You know, I think that we're all kind of hardwired. If you're an empathic person, if you're a highly sensitive person, and you're used to in some way holding space for people, we usually draw on our own experiences. If we've had common struggles, we usually use those in the context of, well, I went through that and here, let me show you how it helped me. What I learned about how to really hold space for people in crisis is very different than injecting yourself into the conversation, which is what I would normally have done. We don't do that at all. In fact, people don't know my real name when I'm on the Lifeline. People don't know where I'm from. People don't know if I'm gay or straight or married or have children or what I do for work. Nothing. And that anonymity is designed to really ensure that the entire conversation focuses on the person who's calling, who needs help. So I'm not injecting anything about myself. And it's really, it was challenging in the beginning because your instinct or my instinct was to hold space in a very different way. And now that I've learned the value of just receiving what someone's saying and validating what someone's saying and not being judgmental and offering whatever support I can, it's really changed the way that I listen to people, even in my own life, even just friends and family. And I just feel like I'm a more effective listener, I think is what it all boils down to for me.
Oh, that's so amazing. I know it's got to be confidential anyway, because you don't want, yes, you're not able to disclose anything that you actually listen to when you are on the Lifeline taking calls. You're not able to disclose any information whatsoever. And that's the beauty of it, really, that you can take a call, you can be anybody can be calling you from any part of the world. As long as they have access to that line, they're just saying, I need help. And you're there to listen to them, to point them in the right direction if you can, you know.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, our goal is not to solve people's problems as much as we wish that we all wish that we could. Every single one of us who takes calls wishes that we could solve everything for everyone, but that's just not realistic. So what we're trying to do is help them reduce their behaviors if they're harmful behaviors, or if they're hopeless, feel less hopeless, or if they need resources, provide resources and support. So it definitely has allowed me. I mean, I've been on the Lifeline now almost 2 years, and it really just has given me such an opportunity to pay it forward and to help other people who may not otherwise have someone to go to for help. So it's just been a beautiful part of the last 2 years for me.
Beautiful. Thank you. And you just said it's something that you do to pay it forward. Does anybody offer you help? Because I'm sure you get exposed to secondary trauma by listening to other people's trauma regularly. Do you have anyone that you talk to when you finish work and you're feeling overwhelmed?
I love and appreciate that you asked that question, because no one has ever asked me that question before. And
I think it's something that happens, you know.
It does. It really does. And I'm really grateful that you asked that question, because it gives me the chance to share kind of my own self-care and how someone in my position of being on Lifelines does deal with the byproduct of other people's stress and trauma.
Yeah.
And it also can be very, very triggering for me too, as a multiple suicide survivor. I've been in situations where, you know, people are at imminent risk and I'm the only thing in between them living and dying. And, you know, it can be incredibly, incredibly triggering. So I'm very fortunate that in the case of the Trevor Project, they are so, so prepared and proactive in terms of taking care of their own counselors. Like, they're as concerned with the health and well-being emotionally of their callers who are calling in for help as they are with their staff of supervisors and counselors like myself. So, I mean, this is just an example, and it's a very unusual example, that I was on the Lifeline this week and taking calls for my shift. And, you know, I wouldn't say that we get these imminent and high-risk calls often. We definitely get them for sure. But, you know, oftentimes a lot of people just really just want to talk and share or vent. And I happen to get three back to back to back imminent risk suicide calls.
Oh dear.
And so it was definitely a challenging shift. It was a challenging day. And we always have multiple supervisors online at the same time. And immediately, I mean, as soon as they know what you're dealing with, they're checking in on you. They're ensuring that you're okay, that your contact is okay. There's a debrief space. We debrief after every call. They're checking in to make sure that I have an outlet. And so I have incredible amounts of support on the Trevor network itself. And then, I mean, I'm just very lucky that I have a great husband who's been there with me since we were 17, is so incredibly supportive. And he holds all the space for me. And I have my own therapist who is just a beautiful human being who has really been transformative in my life, helping me to establish boundaries and take care of myself. And so I'm one of the lucky ones. And I try to do all the things too. Like I try to talk about the way that I'm feeling, and I do a lot of journaling because I'm a writer anyway. So that's what I do. And I do a lot of movement and meditation. So I have lots of outlets, and I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate in that way, because it's allowed me to be able to balance what I do.
You just said you have a lot of outlets and you have a lot of things that you do to unwind. What are some of those things that you do to unwind after a long day?
So a lot of the things, like I just said, I love movement and fitness and running and walking and practicing yoga and meditation. So, I mean, my day, regardless of whether I'm on the Lifeline or not, my day starts with meditation and journaling and movement. And I try to do some form of that after my shifts as well, whether I'm on a Lifeline shift or I'm giving an interview like this where I'm talking about my past, or I'm working on a book right now, another book, and it's about my father's story. And it's very, very challenging. It's emotional. It's hard to go back to that place. So I try to do all of those things and separate myself from that headspace and kind of, you know, just kind of clear things out of my mind one way or another, whether I write them down or whether I run out and go for a run. But I really do try and put those things that have accumulated in my head from those shifts and those hard calls in another place, in a journal, or have a conversation, or process them while I'm running. So those are typically the things that I do for myself.
So just get physical, move and shift shift the energy from that negative to something positive.
Exactly.
Brilliant. I know. And that's one of the things that mental health advocates actually say, that you need to just get out, move around, just listen to music, take a walk, do something. Maybe it might even be cooking, if you like cooking. That is brilliant that you have something that you do after taking such a long call or something stressful or handling a difficult call. The last bit I want to know about is your involvement with the National Alliance on Mental Health. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with that?
With my work with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness is an organization that's been around for decades. It's a grassroots organization that provides information, resources, guidance, training on how to navigate various types of mental illness. And one of the programs that they have, it's a volunteer program, and that's one that I'm a part of, it's a storytelling program, because so much of how we heal comes through the stories that we receive or that we share. And so one of the things that I do, and since I'm here in Boston in Massachusetts, I go around the state of Massachusetts to different civic organizations and schools and outlets who want to bring us in to share our stories of navigating suicide loss or navigating grief or navigating someone with substance abuse or someone who has mental illness in a family. So there's a crew of us that go around the state and go to various organizations and just share. We are very vulnerable and open and tell our story and take questions and have dialogues that hopefully will help people who are hearing them find some kind of hope, like some bit of a resource or a suggestion or a strategy that maybe helped me or someone in my life, maybe can help them too. So that's the message behind it.
Well, that is so beautiful. It's such a beautiful, and I love Massachusetts. You know, it's one of the songs I love from when I was young. I've been listening to that music cycle. Massachusetts, you know. And I was in Massachusetts about April this year. So, yeah, I actually went around and, you know, my niece got admitted to one of the universities, the colleges there. You call it college there. Yeah. So we were in Massachusetts and I was like, wow, is this the place I've been hearing so much about? You know, I've always wanted to be there. So it's a lovely place. Thank you so much.
It is. Yes, of course. There's so much history here. And this is definitely the time of year to enjoy it the most.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. And last thing is, where can we find your books, your resources, or anything about you? If any listener wants to follow you, where can they do that?
The best place to find everything that I do is always on my website.
So you can connect with you, actually, or speak with you, anything.
Yes, my website. Absolutely is the best place to find everything that I do. I write a regular syndicated column called We Are Who We Are. I also have a YouTube channel and a Survivor series. It's called the Suicide Survivor series videos that also are, those are on my website, all my books, my articles. I have a very extensive mental health resources hub and toolkit hub that I've curated over the past year. And I was so glad that you read off all of those emergency numbers, because one of the things I've worked very hard on is creating this hub that has resources in a variety of different communities and areas. Like, for instance, I have a lot of European resources, Canadian resources, BIPOC resources, LGBTQ, elderly, veterans, API, all sorts of resources that people can source. It's all free. It's all accessible. You can find that on my website as well. And all my social handles are there too.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been amazing speaking to you. I know it's a difficult topic, but you've handled it so brilliantly. And just one of those things that we need to talk about more openly. We need to raise awareness. I know lots of people do this every year. The numbers are just staggering, people committing suicide. We don't talk about it. We don't want it. It shouldn't be something that we hide behind the doors to talk about, because it's something that happens. So we need to keep raising this awareness and then continue having these conversations to get people to actually talk about how they're feeling before they get into that headspace where they think everything is gone and I can't do anything about it anymore. I don't want to live anymore. No, those are not. We should talk about things before it gets to that stage.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And a big, big thank you to you for just providing a safe platform and space to have these conversations, because the more people like you who do that, the more people will get comfortable with the conversation and it becomes less stigmatized and people are more transparent and honest. It's how we help more people by having more conversations.
Oh, thank you. So this podcast will be on every podcast platform. Please subscribe, share with friends and family, and we just need to keep continuing these conversations, as you said, just to remove that stigmatization from this topic. So it's been amazing having you on the podcast today. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a nice rest of the afternoon.
Thank you, and I hope the same for you.
Bye-bye.
A big thank you to all our listeners who have been sending us messages through the message link. I would like to thank everyone who has listened in so far and contributed to this podcast. Thank you so much. We couldn't have done anything without you. Keep listening, keep sharing, keep downloading, and keep liking. Thank you again.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. at Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.